Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
Podcast. Evidence-based medicine integrates clinical experience and a patient-centered focus with the best available research information. It's a movement which aims to increase the use of high-quality clinical research in clinical decision-making. The evidence-based approach requires new skills of the clinician, including efficient literature research and the application of formal rules of evidence in evaluating clinical literature. This podcast is dedicated to all healthcare providers with a thirst for scientific knowledge. Those who are explorers, innovators, and researchers. Welcome to the Evidence-Based Podcast with your host, Dr. Jason Cavallina.
On December 30th, Li Wenliang dropped a bombshell in his medical school alumni group on the popular Chinese messaging app, WeChat. Seven patients from a local seafood market had been diagnosed with a SARS-like illness and quarantined in his hospital. Li explained that according to a test he had seen, the illness was coronavirus, a large family of viruses that included severe acute respiratory syndrome, otherwise known as SARS. This little tidbit came from CNN from a report first established on December 30th. Li then was contacted by the Wuhan Central Chinese Police and was taken in for questioning. They accused him of starting a panic that was unnecessary. This is what we'll be talking about today on the Evidence-Based Podcast on the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. J. Max on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Today, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus show. What are we talking about when we talk about coronavirus? How does it spread? Where did it come from? What are coronaviruses? What type of information do they possess inside them? What type of information do we need to know to protect ourselves from it? And do we need to protect ourselves from it? That's what we'll be discussing today on the Pharmacy Podcast Network's Evidence-Based Podcast.
So, Dr. J, a respiratory virus common in animals, which can create the common cold-like syndromes, has now turned into this panicky thing that is out there affecting now Americans. It seemingly started in China, called the coronavirus. And I don't know what this is all about, so I'd like to break this down for our pharmacist listeners to help them help their patients understand more.
Simply, Todd, coronaviruses are a group of viruses that are very common, just like the common cold. They're named corona because they have a crown-like spike on the top on their surfaces, so they look like they have crowns. And some coronaviruses only affect animals, others affect humans. Some coronaviruses, just like the way flu mutates, they can start in an animal, only affect that animal, and then mutate and start to affect humans. When they infect humans, and after crossing from an animal into a human, that tends to make us think that that's a slightly stronger virus. It has the ability to change host. It has the ability to be transmitted through the air, right? So that means it's got some structural components that make it a little bit stronger. What does that mean? It just means it's more resistant to your standard cleaning techniques. So if we were to wash it down a surface, you would want to, instead of just cleaning, you would want to sanitize, right? So sanitization is a little bit different than just cleaning off something. If you look at your Lysol towelettes, they'll tell you that to clean a surface means this, and to sanitize a surface, well, that means you have to wipe it down, keep it wet for a certain amount of time, and then you can go back over that and take off the residue. So we're just really talking about a group of viruses that are very common. They are, again, affect animals. They can affect humans alone, animals alone. They could also be a host in an animal, mutate, and then start to affect humans, or infect humans, sorry. Most people get infected with the human coronavirus at some time in their lives. It usually causes mild to moderate upper respiratory infections, just like the common cold does, and can also cause severe illnesses such as bronchitis and pneumonia. And that's the full run of any coronavirus. It's also important to know that this coronavirus that we're talking about now, called the 2019 nCoV virus, nCoronavirus, is a novel virus. It's new. That's what novel means. It's a novel coronavirus. And the situation around it is going to be a little bit different. There are other types of coronaviruses that have affected humans in the past. 2019 nCoV is the newest one. There was also MERS, which is the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. And then a few years ago, I think we all might remember SARS. That was a severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus that caused very much like the same problems we're seeing today, where everybody was really scared about it going around the world and causing a pandemic, and it caused severe respiratory defects and pneumonias.
So there's been a bunch of people affected in Asia, in China. I don't know the numbers. I'm wondering, is it something that is any different than influenza? I've seen some tweets that have said, 6,000 plus killed, getting everybody panicky, and then the punchline is, and this is influenza. So I'm wondering, do we panic at the right things? Do we just have to be cognizant as healthcare providers, as pharmacists for the patients? They're going to have a lot of questions, obviously, I'm sure. I'm trying to unpack the severity of this.
So let's think about, let's backtrack, right? And to understand what's happening today, let's understand what happened with the Spanish flu and when we had the pandemic of 1917, 1918, after World War I. We had a situation where there were a lot of service members over in Europe and fighting World War I. They came in contact with a flu, right? The ability at that point to travel around the world was relatively limited to shipborne transport, right? So the incubation period of the flu is about 1 to 2 weeks. You could be spreading that virus for a long period of time before you actually get sick. Now, during this pandemic, members of the people in the world in Europe are sick. They go home to their home countries and get their home country sick. They don't exactly know what the problem is. They work through it, but there's still not the infection control that there is today. And millions of people around the world get sick and die. What stops the spread? Death, unfortunately, because viruses like parasites are good at infecting a host. They aren't very good at staying around long enough to infect lots and lots of people unless we know what's going on. We move forward into today. We have a lot of things that rapidly transport disease around the world. Those things are airplanes. So think about if it's an unknown virus, we don't know what's getting people sick. It's an unknown flu. It's a different flu than last year. This one happens to be swine flu. This one happens to be chicken flu. Or it's coronavirus, right? Take any one of these diseases and put it into that. I'm sick. I don't know I'm sick. Or I'm not sick yet, but I'm harboring the virus. I get on an airplane. I infect 250 people, right? Or let's say there's 250 people on the plane. Maybe I only infect 100 of those people. That's now 100 vectors that when they land at their home airport, move around the world, move around the country, and infect God knows how many other people who then become vectors for the disease. So if it's a virus or illness that can be transported via air, meaning if I cough on you, if I cough in the air and the air is not filtered properly, then I could infect somebody else. If the incubation period is long enough and I don't know I'm sick for 3 to 5 days, that's 3 to 5 days that I'm now walking around infecting my office, infecting the school, infecting the people at the grocery store, get on another airplane, infect another 250 people, and that goes around the world. I'm an air crew member. I travel to 30 different airports, right? That's the scary part of infectious disease when it comes to a virus that has a long incubation period that takes a while to figure out how sick you really are. Maybe the severity isn't so bad it knocks you down in a day. Oh my God, I'm so sick. What the heck just happened to this person? That's where the fear of a pandemic comes from. But we have to understand that what's the source of this problem, this new coronavirus, and what can we do to protect ourselves just from standard precautions? Just like every other cold and flu virus there is, we need to wash our hands. We can cover our face with a face mask if you need to. And just diligent cleaning of surfaces and your environment is probably enough to keep things at bay. The source of the spread in this virus situation, again, is through the Chinese health authorities, and they've let us know that, and actually working with the NIH, we have an idea that the origin of this is the beta coronavirus. It was just like MERS and SARS, and the origins tend to look like it comes from bats this time around. Bats. And again, yeah, bats. The coronavirus actually is very common in animals, like we said. In this situation, a lot of situations, it's different types of animals. It was very common in camels, bats, rodents. Some are very chicken, right? Is another chicken, pork. So where we get the name swine flu. It was a flu virus that was originally in pigs and mutated into humans.
So in 2002, 2013, there was the, you know, well-known SARS outbreak, which killed 349 people. And now at least 427 people have died specifically from this coronavirus outbreak, with about 20,600 infected and 11 confirmed cases here in the United States. And when I read about the numbers, then I feel as a consumer, I feel as a non-healthcare provider, someone who is kind of on the outside inside of all of this, that it's not really that serious. I mean, not that we don't take it serious. I'm actually more worried about the petri dishes called second graders, who I have one, taking all the germs that they get from inside the school and bringing it in my house. I'm more worried about my little 8-year-old daughter, like I said, walking petri dish. But by the way, she's home today with a sore throat. So bingo, like I gave her a kiss goodbye and I looked at her like a little germ and got her some juice and set her up for some Jello and whatever else I can do. But I'm more worried about getting the flu from my kid than this coronavirus. Like, how serious should we take this as a culture, as Americans, as United States healthcare professionals?
Let's not go crazy and jump off the deep end. Right now, more people in the United States are sick with flu and upper respiratory infections of regular common cold and bronchitis than are going to be sick right now with coronavirus, with 2019 and COV. So it's not something that we need to worry about in terms of every day walking around, run to the pharmacy. Oh my God, wear your mask. You don't have any mask. I need a mask. I need an N mask, antiviral mask. Why don't you have these things? Our friends inside the pharmacies are very, very busy taking care of everybody on a regular basis. It's not appropriate to be running to the pharmacy, grabbing your surgical masks or your procedural masks and giving them a heartache because they don't have them in stock. It's not in that vein. Is it going to, I would be more worried today that I'm going to be infected with the flu, even though I got my flu shot, right? Than I am worried about getting coronavirus. Coronavirus spreads the same way every other cold and flu virus spreads. It's in the air. It can be through coughing and sneezing, close personal contact, such as touching the skin and the hand, skin of the hands, mucous membranes, and touching an object or surface with the virus on it. Then touching your mouth, nose, or your eyes, again, touching mucous membranes, and very, very, very rarely can you get it from touching poop, meaning, you know, fecal matter. So who's at risk for this virus? Anyone can get a coronavirus infection. But again, just like flu, we're worried about the young children, and because they're most likely to get infected. And in the United States, infections are more common in the fall and the winter. And that's just general coronaviruses. This specific coronavirus, remember, there's lots of coronaviruses around. Most of them do cause the common cold. Are we more worried about flu, this coronavirus, regular coronaviruses? You know, I would just be worried about getting sick. Be concerned about your general precautions for keeping yourself healthy. Diet, exercise, washing your hands, cleaning surfaces with disinfectants, and using the sanitation or sanitizing your surfaces instead of just wiping them down quickly. Right? Even phones, make sure you wipe down your phone. Make sure you wipe down the phones in the offices. If you have a communal area, make sure that the break room is wiped down with a disinfectant. Clorox and Lysol wipes do have a section on the product that tells you the difference between cleaning and sanitizing. Sanitization kills virus and bacteria. Wiping down a surface isn't enough to do it. Like I said earlier, to sanitize a surface, you have to keep the area wet for a specific amount of time based upon the product you're using. That's on the product instructions. And then you can go back over that surface to remove any residue of chemical that might be on this. Does that assuage some of your fears?
It does. I think it makes it, puts it into perspective, makes it realistic. You know, I think this, every time we hear about something in the news and understand it's 2020, I mean, if this were 100 years ago, nobody would even have heard of the coronavirus. Like, we would have thought the cases that were happening in China, because 100 years ago, it probably wouldn't even be at the United States yet with how air travel has advanced. So I think social media makes things worse in some ways, even though it's great information and it's great to get some awareness out there. I think that the hyperbole boils over. I think news wants to talk about things on the news. I think it's a way for people to get retweets. I think it's a, so I think there's a balance between being a spaz and being a good source of information for your patients, because you, the pharmacist, who's one of the most trusted, top 2-3 most trusted healthcare professionals in all of healthcare, you are the ones that have to have the right answers, because it's like the crazy Dr. Google and the search for the interwebs versus, you know, coming to a pharmacist and getting what needs to be the real solid information. That's why I'm excited, Jason, that you did this episode today, because I wanted to understand, you know, what the potential of this is to becoming, you know, the Black Death plague, they call it the Black Death in 1346 through 1353, and 75 to 200 million people died of the bubonic plague. So that those kind of scary things isn't where this is going, but I want cognizance and I want good information out there.
Well, I think that's 100% correct. We have to take a grain of salt, right? Everything that we hear. 20, 30 years ago, who told you about a medical problem. You know, it was your doctor or not a college professor, but an expert researcher in the field. Then it became the subject expert at CNN or at Fox or at ABC News, right? But that subject expert doesn't exactly have a medical background, a science background, doesn't have the communicative abilities to discuss the real situation. And this goes back to something we talked about a while ago, about the ability of medical professionals and healthcare professionals and scientists to be able to communicate information in a way that is palatable to the public and understandable by the public. We do a disservice by not talking in regular terms about these issues. We don't want to be wrong, so we hedge our bets. We talk in generalities. We say, in this situation, it did this, but we're not really sure in this situation, it's going to be this way. In doing so, we are staying true to our scientific beliefs. It's not proven. It's not fact. I can't go outside of that. But in doing that, we do a disservice to the understanding of the lay public. We need to discuss with them all of these issues, have an opinion, have it based on fact, and then always be thinking in our heads, if this was my mom, if this was my child, if this was my dad, what would I tell them? How would I tell them? And that's how you get your message across in a way that everybody's going to understand you. Some things that we should talk about are the big myths that are going on around the world right now, the QAnon people, the deep state created a virus that's going to kill us all kind of stuff. Is the coronavirus the most dangerous virus that exists? Absolutely not. The coronavirus, again, is not the common flu. Kills 60 times more people annually than a coronavirus will. Will I die if I'm diagnosed with a coronavirus? Only 2% of cases have reported deaths. And most of the deaths were associated with weaker immune system people, the children and the elderly. Just like we worry about with cold and flu, we worry about our children and we worry about our seniors. There they have the immune systems that are compromised. They have multiple, either they've got very young lungs or they've got multiple comorbid conditions that make colds and flus harder to deal with. Do you need to go out and buy a hazmat suit and an N95 mask to stay protected? No, guys, you don't. You just have to wash your hands like we've been talking about since the beginning. You have to sneeze into your elbow. For those of you who would like to ironically dab, go right ahead and ironically dab your sneezes into your elbows. And that's your best practice. Then, of course, make sure you wash your shirt if you sneeze into it. Do we have to panic? Do we have to blame the Chinese for this emergency? Are the Chinese creating this virus in Wuhan and their biometric laboratories, and then they're going to release it around the world to kill us? I don't know. Todd, are they going to do that?
I don't think so. I think we have more to worry about, like we said, with the good old influenza flu that goes around every single year and attacks more of our seniors and more of our young, you know, kids that are more susceptible. And, you know, what's exciting for me to stand back and watch over the years that I've really started paying attention to healthcare and medicines, which is probably like that 25 to 30 year mark in my life, is that we're winning. 36 million people since the beginning of tracking what was known and what is known as today, HIV, AIDS, which started in the Republic of Congo, tracked in 1976. We hit a pinnacle of 2.2 million people dying between 2005 and 2012, and that's dropped dramatically, where now we're winning. We're winning because of education, because of advancements in medications in the specialty pharmacy sector, and because pharmacists and physicians work together on crushing this potential disease that could ravish the human population, and it hasn't. So we're beating it. So I like thinking that education brings knowledge that trickles into the public so that the public knows what's real and what's not. And I think that is the first line of safety for us all.
Absolutely agreed. We need to think about a couple of simple things when we're dealing with cold and flu season, even just outside of cold and flu season. What do we do when we have a cold? What do we do when people in the office are snuffling and sneezing and coughing and all kinds of things are going on? When we're worried about cold and flu, when we're thinking about this coronavirus, what are the symptoms that we should worry about? Funny thing is, they're just like everything else: fever, cough, shortness of breath, malaise, that's tiredness for everybody else, and the CDC believes that there is a 2 to 14 day incubation period after exposure. It's basically seen the same as the incubation period for MERS was. And so what do we have to do to be careful? We have to be careful with the same ways that we were careful during these cold and flu seasons. You have to wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, right? Just a quick rubbing of your hands together under the water is not going to be the best way to do it. Make sure that your hands are pointed down into the sink when you're washing so that the material is washed off of your hands and into the sink. Todd, take your hands together, put them together like you're praying, if you pray, and then point your hands down, then put them under the flow of the water. That means that you're now flushing everything into the sink, and that's going to keep your hands cleaner. Use alcohol-based hand sanitizers when you're coming into contact with people and you don't have the opportunity to wash your hands. That's not to say that alcohol-based hand sanitizers are the best way to keep you safe. It's something to use in between hand washings. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Stay at home when you are sick. Keep your children home when they are sick. Right? I don't know about you, Todd, but my sick days aren't for me. My sick days are for when my kids are sick, so I don't send them to school so they don't get everybody else sick. I feel that is my personal responsibility not to infect the world with my kids' illness. Maybe that's not how everybody else thinks, but that's how I think. Yep. That goes to my vaccination position as well, right? This is going to be controversial, everybody. Everybody hold on to your hats. Here's my controversial stand. You have every right to send your kid to school. You have every right not to vaccinate your child. But just like guns, if your child or your gun is used in a way that harms somebody else, you need to be held responsible for that. So if you don't vaccinate your child and your child gets a vaccine-preventable disease, the parent, oh, here it comes, the parent should be responsible to the community and to the government for making that decision. If you send your child to school and they infect other kids and other people get hurt because your child got sick from a vaccine-preventable disease and you didn't do something about it, you should be held responsible for that. So if I send my child to school who is sick and they get other kids sick, that's my fault. I need to take responsibility for this. I need to take personal stock in this situation, and you need to take personal stock and personal responsibility for maintaining your own health. If you do that and each person takes care of their own health, then the community health gets stronger. Sorry for my controversial soapboxing.
No, I think kind of science fiction when I start thinking of what we have so many things that have been in science fiction that actually become science fact. It's just kind of like the way that I think our society and humans have been for years. And
I think that's how we've always driven dreams. Like science fiction is dreaming, right? Dream what you want to in existence, say it to quote unquote the universe, and it'll become true. Because there are brilliant minds who work on the fringes of what is possible and say, I want to make it that way. I want to put a device in my hand that I can communicate around the world with anybody because I saw it on TV because they dreamt it. Let's make it happen. Those are the innovators. Those are the dreamers. Those are the people we need to have working all the time.
Yep, exactly. I think that the advancement of medications, tracking the effectiveness of medications. We have a friend of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Harry Travis, who's the CEO of eTectRx, which is the digestible pill capsule that is activated by your stomach acid, starts giving medication breakdown information to your iPhone, which is transferred to the medical record. I think that's fascinating. So where nanotechnology is going to go and where advancements of medications and customized medications, as well as tracking flu through the same types of technologies, I think back to your point, someday we'll be able to find out very quickly based on whether that be a saliva test or a blood test, who is the contractors and the people that are spreading diseases based on their whatever, not being vaccinated or doing something else versus the ones who are. That becomes very dystopia-like in some ways because we're afraid of the overarching big brother watching over us. But on the other side, it's also saving lives. So I'm not sure exactly where the balance is, but those kinds of things are definitely coming.
Well, in the 50s, in the 60s, you know, I heard stories from my parents. Be careful, they're boomers, guys. It's okay. They actually know what they're talking about. People were quarantined in homes. If you had scarlet fever, you were quarantined in your home. If you had the mumps, you were quarantined in your home. If you left the house and your kid went to school, there was hell to pay for it. Is there something wrong with it? No, there's really nothing wrong with it. They're using the knowledge of illness to keep it from spreading. Let's just use common sense. I know common sense is uncommon today, but we need to just think about, and this comes full circle back to what we started to talk about. This is the evidence-based podcast. I'm not giving you information that is in my head, right? I didn't come up with any of this information. I used critical thinking. I used my ability to read and research and understand what I've read and researched to give you information in a palatable way. And I hope that comes across in these conversations. I went to the NIH. I went to the CDC website. I went to Kaletra, because I'll talk about Kaletra in a couple minutes. And I read about these things. Listen, not everybody has the skill set or the will set to do this and gathering information and making it available to people to understand in an easy way. And, you know, that's the job of, I think, our scientific community. There needs to be more people like us to make the information palatable. And to say, pardon me, guys.
Coronavirus setting in.
To say we're evidence-based means we are giving you the research. We're going to give you a list of sightings at the end of the conversation today in the show notes about where we got our information. And I'm only giving you that information as fact. I'm going to filter some of that information through my experience, through my clinical expertise, and through the way that I've dealt with my patients in the past. And again, my own personal bend on how I feel disease state management should be done, right? But, you know, you're going to get fact and you're going to get some opinion. But I'm telling you, guys, this is my opinion. Guys, this is the facts from the CDC website. We have to go to our experts and we have to read what the experts say. We have to trust in science, It got us this far. It got us to the moon, right? It got us to the depths of the oceans, and it got us our iPhones. We have to be able to trust in science, trust that the most people are out for the greater good of the rest of us, and that we're not trying to hide anything from you. Are there conspiracy theories out there? Yes, there's tons of conspiracy theories out there. Do we need to be cognizant that the big bad man might be trying to hurt us? Probably. But what can you control? Todd, I don't know about you, but I can't control the government in China. I can't control Chinese military officers infiltrating the United States and learning our gene splicing techniques. Can you?
Nope. I really can't.
Why should I worry about it? I can't worry about it. I got enough to worry about with my children, my work, and keeping myself from getting sick. What else? Why do I need the bandwidth? I have set bandwidth. It's going to focus on these things. I can't control what I can't control. And once you understand that and you let that the rest of that go, when you hear funny things on the internet, right, you need to sort of take it with a grain of salt, double check your sources. Do you have time for that? No. Most of us see something, react to it, and go right after it because, oh, it affects us emotionally. So we have to remove, in this instance, emotion. And even in other areas of our lives, remove that emotion for fact. What's the fact? How do I know that's the fact? Because the experts who have done the research are telling me that these are the facts, and we go on from there.
Excellent. So in wrapping up, what else are we shooting out there and sharing with the Pharmacy Podcast Nation? And is there anything that you have in mind for your next episode of the Evidence-Based Podcast?
I just wanted to touch on one other thing that I think is really cool. Coronavirus is an RNA virus. And in this instance, it turns out that it responds very well to an HIV drug that's been in the market for ever called Kaletra. Kaletra is lopinavir and ritonavir, and it's being shipped right now from the United States to China. That plus Tamiflu has shown to work very well in knocking down the infection once it started in people. So there is a treatment if it's necessary. But remember, again, just like common cold, this is going to run its course with supportive care. You should be fine. We worry about children and immunocompromised patients and the elderly. Outside of that, I should wrap up anything I have on coronavirus. If guys, once we do post this, if you have questions about anything that we could answer, you could shoot us a DM on our social medias. I'm at JMax on Instagram. I actually am at Dr. JMax on Instagram, at Dr. JMax on TikTok. I'm on Facebook as well. If you want to find me there, shoot me a message and I'll do my best to answer your questions. Future shows, again, we're always looking for suggestions from you guys. We like to be topical. That's why we hit this show, because it's the biggest thing in the news right now. And we wanted to assuage everybody's fears that there aren't this isn't that crazy of a thing that we have to worry about. I'd love to hear some suggestions for you. Hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook, and I'm there for everybody to see about what topics you'd be interested in. I know that we have been talking about an opioid epidemic show. We really do need to hit that, and it is something we've been putting together for a while.
We will. I am excited about that and what's coming. 2020 is going to be a big transformational period of time, which we'll look back and realize it really was a big change in the pharmacy industry, the evolution of healthcare, PBM reform, buying groups changing to support independently owned pharmacies. There's lots of things happening that I'm going to be excited about reporting on as well as supporting. So thank you so much for your work, Jason, and what you do.
Thank you very much. I want to do a selfless plug at this point. listen, guys, lots of great stuff are going on for independent pharmacists with the buying group at American Pharmacy Purchasing Alliance. Not only does the APPA provide you with very a big win on the buy side. We're talking maybe 200 basis points better than you're buying now, but they're also an insured GPO that provides you with DIR fee insurance. Up to 2% of your DIR fees that are being clawed back by the evil insurance companies and PBMs, they're going to have an insurance program where every month you're going to be able to send in those losses and you'll be insured back for up to 2% of your loss. APPA is also going to provide you with call centers, clinical information, and clinical programs run by RxVIP concierge that are going to increase your reach in the community, increase your patient counts, and also allow you to have some passive income in the pharmacy. And that's my selfless plug.
That's awesome. Those changes are needed. We can't expect pharmacy owners to stay in business with the status quo. So I'm pretty excited to hear more about this. APPA, the American Pharmacy Purchasing Alliance, is a sponsor of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, and we appreciate everything that they're doing for us and our messaging and getting these podcasts out to you, the pharmacist. You are the hub of healthcare, and we thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation, the evidence-based podcast. Thanks so much, Jason.